That was tremendous.
Y'all are very blessed. You've got plenty of song leaders. Small congregation. At times, that's a struggle. And at least you may lack in number, you think, but you're certainly not lacking in able people. Beautiful song. Today's a huge day for me. I meant to mention that this morning. Very momentous occasion, Mac, today. For me. For 6 months, I've shaved my head with shaving cream and a razor. And every time I try to grow it back, my head starts hurting and breaking out. So I'll get my wife to shave it again. And she'll say, I'll ask her, do you mind that it's bald? No, I like it that way. That's fine. This last time, as my hair was growing out again, I said, you sure? She said, no, please grow it out. She was tired of looking at it as this cue ball. So today, first time in forever. Today, although you can barely see it, I parted it. I put my Johnny B on it. I had the hairdresser trim it over the ears because it was curling out. So I got a haircut for the meeting, and I brought this. It's probably something she uses for the dog. I'm not sure. But it really worked well. And I'm so happy. I brushed my hair today. I usually get out of the shower and I just take my hand and go. But let me say, if you've never had a bald head, you don't know what you're missing. I love how it feels. You can hit yourself on top of the head. It's got this meaty smack. It feels so smooth. It's cool. But now when you go outside and it's cold, man, oh my goodness. Or if you go outside like today, your head would get cooked. But there's something to be said. You know, I don't know if Telly Savalas couldn't grow it or just liked it. But I actually have a nice-looking bald head. Some people can't do that. I thought it was okay. My wife finally was honest with me. She said, no, grow your hair. Please. She's very nice about that stuff. Wives, the good ones will lie to you a little bit. They'll try to help you. I said, I really didn't like that sermon. She said, no, that was great. I'm like, oh, you're lying. Those of you who've been to college or you've lived singly and you've shared a room or an apartment with a roommate, has anybody ever had to do that? You know, you got to be able to give and take a little bit on that roommate stuff. They'll run an ad a lot of times in the paper, what they can stand. No smokers, can't deal with that. No dogs. It can be trouble if you're not careful. And so you kind of have to compromise a little bit if you're going to make it work. Well, to be an eternal roommate with God, there's no compromise on His part. It's just got to be a certain way. You've got to equip yourself. Heaven is a prepared place for prepared people. Amos, I believe it's 3:3. Can two walk together unless they're agreed? It doesn't mean have you and God had a conversation about what the give and take is. You're to be in agreement with Him. God put out what Wendell Winkler said one time, and I've heard other preachers use this analogy, but if you'll turn to Psalm 15, God put out His want ad for heavenly roommates. He gives the qualifications, the non-starters. There's no give and take on this. This is the way it is. Psalm 15, it's only 5 verses. But I think it's a wonderful scripture. It qualifies you. It tells you what qualifies you to be an eternal companion with Him. And if you look at the first verse, one of David's Psalms, he said, Lord, who may abide? Yours may say sojourn. Who may abide in your tabernacle?
Who may dwell in your holy hill? And number two, he gives the first qualification. He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. They're so similar, but really there's slight differences in those three. He who walks uprightly, a man who practices, who lives godly convictions and principles. They're his principles. You've got to be convicted of it. And you have to have application and incorporate it in your life. So a person that can live in God's temple, his home, has to be somebody who walks uprightly. He's living it. And works righteousness. Not only in his life is he living right, he's trying to work in such a way to, I would say, spread influence, tries to make his surroundings able to have righteousness flourish. You can't live and work in a place for long that's so evil. You can't work righteousness if you're not in the right environment. The man that he's talking about is somebody who walks it and he works it. He tries to incorporate it. He tries to make his whole life and where he is amenable to that sort of thing. And then he speaks it. He speaks the truth in his heart. You know, one of the things that Jesus Christ requires of us, we're willing to confess him. Matthew 10:32. If you confess me before the Father, I'll confess you. If you confess me before men, I'll confess you to the Father. And then verse 3 is the antithesis or the opposite. But if you won't confess me before men, I won't confess you to the Father. And by the way, when you speak with one of your friends who believes faith only, have them look at that with you. If it's faith only, you might hold your place and flip over to John chapter 12. Look at verse 42. John 12:42. Nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. So, faith only in that circumstance would avail them what? Nothing. I had that discussion with an older lady one time, and she just didn't know what to say. I don't think she ever knew those verses were in her Bible. She believed in faith only. I said, here's people that's pretty similar to today. They believe, they understand more than they let on, but because of popularity or lack thereof, the way they might be treated, they don't want to become religious. They don't want to change their lifestyle. I believe it was Robert Jastrow, some famous scientist. They kept after him. He didn't believe in God. And finally they said, why? He said, I don't want to. Well, why is that? Well, he was into a lot of deviant behavior. And he didn't want to give that lifestyle up. So God says to be one of mine, you're going to have to walk it, work it, and talk it. You got to be full core. You got to be faithful. And that's the first requirement. Then verse 2, he tells you some things that he's not going to put up with. Like, if I had a roommate today, I can't have this smoking. I can't have some long-haired dog. The one my wife's got, it's little short hairs, but they're everywhere. There's some things I couldn't deal with. God said there's some that he can't take either. One who does not backlash with his tongue, or backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend. He goes from general and to more specific, as you see there. One who doesn't backbite with his tongue, talk about people behind their back, gossip, tear them down. You've had people in your life like that. To your face, wonderful folks. But But you're almost scared to walk out of their presence because you know what's going to start. By the way, if you go look at Proverbs chapter 6, there's another list of things God hates. And this stuff right here is right there with it. Six things God hates, yea, seven, that are abomination. And he goes through them. This backbiting and that kind of behavior, God hates that. Then he says, nor does evil to his neighbor. He started to get more... Now, it's still general. Neighbor could be a lot of people. I take that in a little... When I think of neighbor, I'm like, y'all probably think of a person or two that lives around you. This is a generic or general sense. But I kind of, when I read that, I think of my close neighbor. You don't do evil to other people. So now we're doing it in reverse. You're talking it, and you're working some bad stuff here. Nor does he take up a reproach against his friend. That's pretty specific, and that's pretty... How untrustworthy, what a vile person to take up a reproach against their friend. You have to wonder, that's a lopsided friendship, isn't it? I bet that other person doesn't see you that way. I've got friends right now that would want to fight if you said something about me in their presence. I'm not saying that's the extent of it. It should be that way. But I'm saying if you've got a friend, you've got an acquaintance, maybe they're not the closest. 1 Corinthians 13 goes a long way, believing the best in people before you say something or do something. That's become a lost thing in this world, hasn't it? And in a church, isn't that terrible? People go to the parking lot to talk about you. In the corner, one of our elders, he said, when he starts talking about people gossiping, he does this. You can't read their lips because they don't want you to. And it's something that they're not willing to come confront you with. If Mac will tell you, if I don't agree with something he says, I'll just tell him. I mean, he thinks I'm dumb, so it don't matter what my opinion is. But I'll tell him. I'll say, hey, Mac, I don't agree with that. Poor Lloyd had to ride back one day, and me and him arguing in the front seat. He's just sitting there, hanging over the front seat. And Mac says, what are you doing? He said, I'm just listening to y'all while we, you know. But that's okay, face to face. It's that getting out in a parking lot in a little covey and saying things, hurtful things. And I told you this morning, my elders, you know, or it may have been a conversation with Mac. My memory's bad, but if you weren't here, you'll get it again if you were here. But my elders, if you go to them and say something about me and complain, that's the first thing I ask. Have you talked to Chris? No. Get out of here. After you talk to him and y'all can't get it resolved, come see me. That's the way it's to be. But to do that to a friend, to do that to brethren, think about how God don't want you for a roommate. Not in that circumstance. We need to walk it, work it, talk it. But in the negative, he says, I don't want backbiting. I don't want you doing evil to other people. And I don't want you taking up a reproach against your friend. And look at verse 4. He says, in whose eyes a vile person is despised. God wants you to despise that which he despises. There's not enough of that in a church. That's a lot of times you're called being legalistic. And y'all are just so intimidating and hateful. But sin needs to be despised, whatever it comes. One of the worst things I ever had to do is go talk to my mother. Mama, you're in a relationship the Bible does not sanction. You're married to a man and you have no right to be in that marriage. Truly, unless you love somebody enough, you won't do that. Love requires the hard stuff. And God says that if I despise, if it's not, if I look at it as evil, then you've got to look at it that way. It's just that way. But that person also honors those who fear the Lord. I do think at times amongst brethren, we don't really give the honor and respect to those who are Christians. to realize who they are. They're children, spiritual children of God who are walking in fellowship with Him. And when you look at Philippians 1:6, where Paul wrote that God began a work in you that He's going to continue with till that day. Brethren, you got to be careful before you start running me down or running your brother down, because that's a work in progress and God is involved in it. They're not perfect. But that person is forgiven by Jesus. He is a work of God, or she is right now. They're not perfect at that moment. Heard a great lesson a long time ago, a fellow from St. Louis. That was the lesson. I'll never forget it. I never took notes, but I can preach it. It's one of my favorite lessons. But the master painter in New York City who wouldn't give interviews, and there was a critic who just reamed on him all the time in the paper. And you couldn't be an artist in New York City unless this guy said your work was good. He finally got an interview. I'm trying to run through it quickly. His assistant said, the master painter said he will see you. He's going to let you watch him paint, but you cannot say a word. You can't critique it. You can write what you want, but don't talk. Don't say anything. Just you can look. So he comes. He's watching them. He found out that the master painter, he was different. He painted, most people paint the background first if you've ever did art, painted or anything. He didn't. He started on the very center. If it was a person, he would paint the person and then out from it everything else. The critic is like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. It's much more tedious. You've got to be so careful around the edges of this. And the assistant would say, shh, the master's at work now. And so the master keeps working, painting, and finally the fellow just starts hollering again. That's not the way to do that. You're never going to get a good critique from me. And finally it just kept on till, you know, it shushed him so much that the master's at work, be quiet. Finally, you've got to go. You've just got to leave. When so later in an art gallery, they had a big showing of works, and he went back and saw it in its finished state. And it was the most beautiful piece of art he'd ever seen. And so he finally had to admit, and he wrote in an article, I'm not qualified to be what I've been all my life, an art critic. If you make the application, you're not qualified to be a critic of the master who's working in me and you who are Christians. You don't know what level I should be at right now. And if you critique me, if you criticize me in a negative way, you're really criticizing God. It's not just me you're criticizing. You don't know. I may be exactly where I need to be. You don't know my limitations. I don't know yours. But sometimes, brethren, you might ought to think, somebody might ought to be in your ear saying, shh, the master's at work with you. He's at work with that one that you're criticizing over there. You're not qualified to critique that. Okay, just a little side note. But if God honors people, and if He is, they're somebody, they're His people, then you need to honor them. We need to honor each other. We're supposed to want to choose one another first over the world. If it came a if I could help somebody, I could only help one, I'm supposed to help my brother first. You know, you always say charity begins at home. That's a biblical thing. Now, what you got left over, you can help others. But you despise that which God despises. You hate that which God hates. You honor that which God honors. And He also says, and he who swears to his own hurt and does not change. We need to be consistent in our lives. Bad things happen. Good or bad, success or failure should not change us. It should not make us something God wouldn't have. And lastly, look at verse 5. He does not put out his money at usury. You know, the Jews, it was a strict law. They weren't to mistreat each other in financial affairs. If somebody took a cloak or a garment, as some kind of a surety. I mean, they had to give it back to them in a certain time. You couldn't just keep it. I believe if you loan somebody money or property after in the seventh year, it was over. You had to forgive it. It was done. If you didn't get your money, I believe that's right, Mac, after 7 years. So they weren't making no 10-year notes like they will now on a truck or a car, you know. You better make it sooner than that, because God said we're not going to have that. You couldn't mistreat. The best way to just say is you couldn't financially take advantage of your brother. You really weren't supposed to just do it to anybody, but especially among your own. Nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. God say, any roommate I've got, you better not be accepting things against the innocent. I don't think a bribe is right. I don't think God respects that in any circumstance. But you better not be mistreating the innocent for some financial gain. It shouldn't happen. And the Jews were notorious for some of that. They just were. He who does these things, he ends it, David does, shall never be moved. I was realizing the other day, I saw on TV that today's average person, people average 11 moves in their life. Probably 40 years ago, it was probably 2. Further back, you know, it was 2 or less. Nobody moved. My daddy worked at the same factory all his life. He'd been living in the same house since 1969. We're on our 10th one. I told Vicki, I said, I guess we got one more left in us. It's a wonderful thing. I hate moving. And one thing about heaven, brethren, there's never going to be another move. There's not going to be a better property. You're not going to be evicted. You got the best landlord that ever was. And everything is going to be perfect. So I guess I'll end with that. If you would like to be that roommate of God, do that self-inspection today. This coming week, reflect on your life and say, am I where I need to meet these qualifications? And so if you're not, I'll just extend that invitation. If you are not... if you're not qualified right now to move in with God, when are you going to be? So if you're not a Christian, we ask, pray that you'll obey the gospel. If you are a Christian, but you know that you're not qualified, don't let pride hold you back. Don't let pride let Satan be your landlord one day, because it's not going to be a happy time. And sadly, you'll never be evicted from there either. But if we can help you in any way, if we can assist you in any spiritual need, why don't you come now while we stand, while we sing.